Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowen. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Dr. Linda Backman about her book, Soul Design: A Regressionist's Guide to Past Lives, Origins and Purpose. Linda, a licensed psychologist and regression therapist, has been in private practice for 45 years. Since 1993, Dr. Backman has guided individuals in regression hypnotherapy to access their past and between lives. Linda studied and co-taught with Dr. Michael Newton, author of the seminal books on Life Between Lives regression therapy, and co-created and served on the founding board of the Society of Spiritual Regression, now the Newton Institute, as membership chair and president. Hi, Linda. Thanks a lot for coming to the podcast.
It's my pleasure, Simon. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Soul Design: A Regressionist's Guide to Past Lives, Origins and Purpose. So you say in the book that after 30 years of seeing what clients uncover in their sessions, you just keep learning and you don't find this too repetitive.
You know, it's fascinating work. You probably have some sense of that as well, given the work that you do. But I find that, however, you know, I have some sense of, I was going to say whoever is in charge, but I have some sense of who's in charge in terms of guides and higher selves. But the process unfolds, Simon, and I mean, certainly each regression is meant to benefit the client, but I think I learn something new almost every single regression that I guide.
You also say, and I just want to talk about this before we get into the book, that your colleague passed away in 1993 and began communicating with you. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, that's the kind of the opening story of my spiritual awareness, or at least my conscious spiritual awareness. So the story in brief, Simon, is that in the spring of 1993, I was in my middle 40s. I had been in private practice as a conventional psychologist, probably for 12 to 15 years. And I had co-established a group practice in the United States. I had co-established a group practice of psychologists and psychiatrists. None of us did spiritually oriented work. And so, you know, we were, you might say, conventional, to just kind of use that word. I knew very little about soul reincarnation, except that, of course, as I've many times looked back on, you know, what were the signs along the way that I might have missed. And I don't feel like I really missed these signs, but prior to 1993, I had done a lot of work. I'd been on hospice board of directors. I'd done a lot of work with clients who were grieving the passing of someone, or clients who had a chronic or a terminal illness. I'd done a lot of work in the whole field of death and dying. I thought I understood why, but truthfully, prior to 93, I really know that I didn't. And so what happened in 1993 is that my I want to say beloved colleague, just a very dear friend and close colleague of mine, a man who in 93 was in his early 30s, he passed from a type of lung cancer in the spring of 93. And from a human standpoint, that was sad and awful and tragic. And you know, he was respected by many. He had a wife. He had a young daughter. But within about 48 hours of his physical death, I began to have spiritual experiences that to my conscious awareness were completely new and we might say out of the blue. And what began to happen were two things. Basically, literally within probably 2 days of his passing, I had no doubt that I could sense his energy around me. I honestly had no doubt that I was intuiting communication from him, which again, I'd never experienced before. And then along with that, because I knew just a little bit about reincarnation, I'd read the first book that Dr. Brian Weiss wrote called Many Lives, Many Masters. So, I mean, I didn't know whether I believed in that or not, but I'd certainly skimmed that book written a long time ago. And so I sensed that in the darkness of my bedroom in the early morning and in the evening or middle of the night or whatever, I sensed that I was seeing scenes in my mind's eye of past lives I shared with my colleague. So I think I was kind of, you might say, bifurcated. And by that, I mean, you know, a part of me thought, well, this is just too weird. And you know, self-talk, it's like, Linda, just forget about this and make it go away because you don't really understand it. But certainly there was another part of me, Simon, that was pretty curious and pretty fascinated. So I decided I'd better explain what was going on to my husband, who had already been my husband for 20, 25 years, who is still my husband. And my husband Earl and I have always been pretty liberal in terms of, you know, social, political, pretty open. But we had never spoken about soul and reincarnation. So what happened was and my husband Earl knew my colleague. They at times played golf and had lunch with each other. So I asked Earl to sit down. And this is just 2 or 3 days after my colleague's passing. And so I began to explain to Earl what I was experiencing. And I could see from the look on his face, on my husband's face, that he didn't think it was weird, which really surprised me. So anyway, I said to him, so clearly, I guess you don't think this is strange. And Earl said, just very straightforward, Earl said, no, I don't. And I've told this story so many times, but I almost wanted to gently, you know, shake him and say, please tell me it's weird and make it go away. But anyway, I said to Earl, why don't you think this is weird? And basically, here's what he said. He said, I guess only now do I remember what happened to me as a boy when I was growing up. And I said, what are you talking about? And Earl said, well, only now, and we're both about the same age, so, you know, now in his middle 40s, only now do I remember that when I was a child, Earl said, I'd go outside often, you know, I'd do this when I was by myself. I'd lay on the ground. I'd lay on my back on the ground. I would watch the clouds move in the sky. And Earl said, I remembered my past lives in detail. And I said, really? And he said, yes. And Earl said, but nobody in my world ever spoke about those kinds of things. And so Earl said, I just tucked it all away and I forgot about it until 1993. So basically Earl said to me, look, and Earl's not a psychologist. He's actually a retired university professor of political science. And so Earl said, if you're interested in this, go for it. You know, I support you. Go read, go study, you know, and it's fine. And I honestly needed that permission. So that was the open door for me, you know, 30 plus years ago.
You did mention there that you were working at a hospice. Was there any kind of spiritual experiences there? Because I've heard of deathbed visions and terminal lucidity.
Yes, and I certainly know that happens, but no, in the years, I mean, I not only did some hospice volunteer work and served on hospice boards, but I also was also the psychotherapist that worked alongside a pediatric oncologist. So no, back in those much earlier years of my career, I didn't come across people with deathbed visions, and I certainly have since then, but not prior to 93.
Well, getting on to your book, you mention quite often in the book your higher self, but that phrase can mean different things to different people. So how would you define what your higher self is?
Yeah, that's a great question, just to kind of, have some clarity of what am I talking about. So higher self is when we're incarnate, when we're alive on Earth, our higher self is the soul energy that we don't bring into our body. When we decide to incarnate, and we always agree to incarnate, we're never, this is my understanding over 30 plus years of guiding regression, we're never forced to incarnate. So we plan certain elements of our upcoming incarnation, and we also plan to bring a certain portion, you might say percentage, of our soul energy into our body when we're born. And we never bring 100% of our soul energy into our physical body, because as I've been told many times by clients, it would blow the circuits of the human body. So just for the sake of example, we might bring, 23% of our soul energy that causes us to live and breathe in an incarnation. The remainder of our soul energy remains in the spiritual realm, the higher realm, whatever you want to call that. And that is our higher self. And our higher self serves as one of our, you might say, supportive cast. Our higher self serves as one of our spiritual guides when we're in body.
And you say that you've got to kind of practice to learn how to trust your intuitive kind of reception of information from your higher self. I could imagine that the higher self might try and communicate with you, and you just think, oh, I'm just imagining it.
Yes. And I mean, I would assume, given the work that you do as well, it's like we have to learn to trust that we are all intuitive. And that we're never alone. We're always supported. We can talk in depth if you want about spiritual guides in our conversation today. But our higher self being one of our supportive team, we have to learn what are the most common ways that we're intuitive. So some of us are more visually intuitive, or the use of imagery or the formal term clairvoyance. But some of us aren't primarily sort of visual receivers of intuitive information. Sometimes intuition comes through emotion. Sometimes intuition comes through signs in our body, signals in our body, a pressure somewhere in our body, or a fluttering of an eyelid or something like that, that is a signal that we're receiving in an intuitive suggestion or guidance. And then for so many of us as modern, thinking, cognitive human beings, a lot of us receive intuition through just simply knowing, and we have to learn to trust that at times we're guided through a sense of just cognition or knowing.
So with spirit guides, how often do your clients encounter their spirit guides? And if they do, how can this be helpful?
Well, almost always in guiding regression, and I'm sure we'll get to this, I guide past life regression, but I guide a longer regression called between lives, what I call between life soul regression. Almost always in both those types of regressions, one or more than one spiritual guide comes forward to aid the client, because it's our spiritual guides that are, you might say, always awake and always at work supporting us to assist us as we come into body with the purpose of evolving as a soul. So we always have one or more guides that are present and available.
And they will work with you before you're born to kind of plan your life. But is it a thing where you're working together and they're an advisor? It's not like they're in charge.
Pretty much the answer to that is yes. The younger, the less evolved or the younger we are in our stages of soul evolution, the more our guides, we might say, are somewhat more dominating in terms of planning a life, putting the elements of an upcoming life in place. And the more evolved we become as a soul, the more we're given, you might say, the latitude to plan a life. But our spiritual guides are sort of like our buddies, our support system that exists at all times from the higher realm.
I think you mentioned in the book that these kind of pre-planned life, you have your life plan, and then it can have ongoing additions to it. And that makes me kind of think, okay, I've got my plan. It's all in place. This is going to be my life. And then there's additions. You think, oh man, I've got additions now.
Yeah. Well, for example, and I'm fairly sure about this, but so as I came upon this experience in 93, and you know, in 93, my life was fairly full. I was married. I had children. I did not yet have grandchildren, but that was an important part of my life. And I was a busy and active psychologist in private practice. And then, you know, sort of unbeknownst to me, along came this, along came this decision made at the soul level by my higher self, the higher self of my colleague who passed, and his guides and my guides. It's like, well, and I really know this is how it works. It's like, well, okay, let's give the Linda person, the Linda in body, more than a glimpse. Let's open the window, so to speak, and give Linda a sense of what happens when we pass. Souls can communicate after they pass, and at times there are souls that we've shared lives with that we know in current life. Let's this team of higher selves and guides that I just mentioned. Let's let Linda have a taste of what this is like, but then Linda gets to choose. What does she want to do with this? So, you know, I could have just chosen to stay on the, you might say, straight and narrow, and keep working as a general psychologist, or I could veer off the path and, take a fork in the road, so to speak, and begin to train and prepare myself to do spiritually oriented work. And of course, I opted to go off in the spiritually oriented direction. But what I began to realize as time went by, and as I slowly but surely, my entire type of work basically morphed to the point where I was doing and have been for years now, doing only regression and spiritually oriented work with people. I've come to points in time and, you know, I now have what I believe is the ability to have some communication with my guides, conscious communication with my guides. I've come to various points where I could add on, you might say, I could add on learning, or I could add on taking my work or my private practice in a, you know, farther down the road, so to speak. And that's what I would call addendums. It's my understanding that if we opt at the human and soul level for an addendum, Only souls, I like to put soul evolution on a 10-point scale. And this is not a better, worse thing. So I don't want people to say, oh, well, I'm just a very young soul. So, you know, what do I know? That's not what I'm implying. We've all been ones and twos and threes and fours and so forth. But it's my understanding that only souls beyond a five and probably beyond a seven on a 10-point scale of soul evolution come upon the option of an addendum. Because an addendum is usually, agreeing to some commitment in your human life that is more challenging, more busy, more intense, and also has a greater means of being of service and impacting humanity. So, but I have no doubt that addendums happen for some of us.
So there's a point where we may be in our lives, and that some people say this, is that I'm having a terrible time. If there's reincarnation, I don't want to come back.
Yeah.
What would you say to them?
Well, I'm chuckling only because I've heard that many times. And there are times when clients will say, well, I just know this is my last life. I just know I get to be done. And when this life is over, then, as I jokingly often say, I get to go drink beer and eat pizza, you know, the rest of my soul time. What a lot of people don't realize is that our higher self, our soul energy, when we're incarnate, our higher self is has responsibilities and commitments in the higher realm to coordinate the higher realm of guides functions to aid humanity and in some ways to aid outside of Earth as well. And we can get to that. But and so our higher self is busy working when we're incarnate. And most of the time, we're not in our final incarnation. That's not to say that never happens, but often that's not the case.
And do you think souls ever choose a wonderful life? It's almost like, you know, the next one, I'm just going to have a rest.
Oh, I think that's completely true. I have come across many clients who, it sort of works one of two ways, Simon, at least based on clients I work with. Either the client is having a current life that's fairly smooth and easy. And when we go into regression, the client learns they've had, you know, a fair number of challenging lives challenging lives are purposeful. And it depends, of course, on what we do during those challenging lives. But sometimes it's the reverse for me with clients. Sometimes I'm working with a client and they come in and they've had many deaths in their loved ones, or they've had many health issues, or, they've had tragedy in their life and that sort of thing. And then when we go into regression, the client goes, and I know this is determined by the client's guides, the client accesses what I often like to call a pastoral past life, just meaning it's pretty smooth and happy and without repetitive tragedy, because the client needs to know they've had lives like that.
Yeah, I sometimes have clients who have a life that's quite quiet, quite mundane. There's no real drama in it, but then again, there's no real happiness in it.
Correct. And so, you know, I think that's always kind of an interesting perspective of a life that's smooth and without great tragedy. Does that include happiness? Or would the client say that's mundane and sort of boring. But a lot of people think, a lot of clients will, you know, come for a regression, and I'm doing the interview, and the client will say, "Oh, I just know I'm a really young soul," and I'll, you know, then I'll query them and I'll say, "Well, okay, so what makes you think you're a young soul?" "Well, I've had so much, you know, my mom got pregnant and my father left before I was born. And then my mother had an alcohol problem and, you know, blah, 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 blah." It goes on and on. So the client will say, "Well, I just know that means I'm a really young soul." And I say to the client, "Actually, it's probably the reverse. You're probably either cleaning up a lot of karma in your current life by stepping through a number of complex issues, or you're stepping through a lot of complex issues because you're a rather experienced soul and you've come into body to serve as a teacher and demonstrate how you deal with complex issues."
You're talking there, I think, about souls that have had a lot of human lives. Do you know how a soul would suddenly get to a point and think, "Okay, I think I've done enough of that. I don't need to incarnate anymore"?
Well, and I know in our conversation we'll get to this, because there is a distinction between or among souls that primarily have lives on Earth and souls that don't primarily have their lives on Earth. But what I know about souls that evolve almost exclusively lifetime to lifetime, sort of on and on and on Earth, is that, and those are souls that I call Earth-based souls, because they are, that soul was created to primarily come to Earth. We do reach a point in our soul's evolution where we can choose whether to continue incarnating or no longer come to Earth. Even so, going back to what we talked about a few minutes ago, our higher self operates as a guide and operates at the soul level to guide and do what we can to influence humanity, to influence issues and concerns and lack of evolution of humanity. So people get into this sort of black and white perspective or black and white mindset where they think, "Well, okay, I'm not going to have any more lives, and so then I'm done, and, you know, no more commitments, no more responsibilities." But based on my years of guiding clients, that's not valid.
So in the book, you mention soul essence psychology. Is that something that you've developed?
Yes. As I was writing this newest book called Soul Design, it felt to me that my team of spiritual guides downloaded two terms, or two, you might, you know, in fancy language, call them constructs. And the first one was soul essence psychology. That's a term that simply came to me. And because I'm a formally trained psychologist, obviously I was trained in the conventional mode of understanding why we are the way we are based on current life. Soul essence psychology means that our psychology, our psychological makeup is, yes, it's based in part on what's gone on in our current life. But what is essential to look at is to look at more than just, you know, what was my mother like? What was my father like? You know, in what country or what grandparents did I have, or, you know, all those kinds of current life questions that traditional psychology focuses on, that along with that, it's What type of soul am I? What's happened in my past lives? What's my current purpose in life today? That makes up soul essence psychology.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom, and these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. We're going to talk about interplanetary souls, as you said. You say in 2006, it became clear to you that maybe half your clients were interplanetary souls. So how can you tell?
Oh, that's a great question. So I began guiding past life regression in probably, 1994 and into 95. And then I came across the tool called Life Between Lives Regression, and I trained in that, and then I co-taught that tool alongside the man that was my mentor years ago, Dr. Michael Newton. And in the early years of guiding between lives soul regression, most of my clients were earth-based souls. And most of the training that I received was tied to souls that primarily embody on Earth and grow and evolve on Earth. And so I probably started guiding between lives soul regression in 1999, 2000, around that time. Initially, for probably 4 to 6 or 7 years, most of my clients were Earth-based souls, or what I call EB souls. And then all of a sudden, I began to realize, and I've been guiding multiple between lives soul regression clients every week for 25 years or more. I began to realize by about 2006 that about a half of my clients were souls not designed to incarnate on Earth. And this was coming forward through the regression. So some of the indications in a regression that a client is a soul that was not created to primarily incarnate on Earth, but what I call interplanetary souls, and people can just exchange that term. The term starseed means the same. The term ET soul means the same. So what I began to learn sometime in the early 2000s was that there are souls that are designed to, their higher selves come from a place in the celestial realm that is not the Earth's spiritual frequency, or is not the Earth's higher realm. And these are souls whose, you might say, home location is a planet, a star system, a spacecraft, even a non-dense interdimensional space. Some of these interplanetary, or what I call IP souls, some of these IP souls agree to incarnate on Earth because the ones that come to Earth, these souls come from a healthy culture in the universe, and they bring an advanced perspective to their embodiment on Earth, essentially to aid the evolution of humanity. And so I learned this from clients because, for those people listening that perhaps don't understand regression, regression is the reverse of channeling or mediumship. Regression means the regression therapist knows how to guide the client, and the client accesses, as you certainly know, Simon, given what you do, the client accesses past life and soul level information themselves, and they're verbalizing it out loud. So I began to be taught client to client to client to client about clients who are IP souls, where they come from, what their unique gifts and challenges are, and why they embody on Earth.
Out of all the souls that are incarnating on Earth, is the amount of IPS compared to EBS souls, that's interplanetary souls compared to Earth-based souls, is the interplanetary ones like just only 10%?
Well, based on what clients tell me, various clients tell me repetitively, no, it's much smaller than that, that the percentage of IP souls on Earth is probably 3%, maybe 4% of the human population.
So if half of your clients were interplanetary souls, it's almost like they're being guided to you because you'd be the right regressionist for them? Because it seems odd that you would have such a high proportion of them when there's such a small percentage in the population.
Yes, I think there's two reasons why I began having about 50% of my clients as interplanetary souls. One is the reason, Simon, you just mentioned is, and my guides have told me this before, my guides wanted me to come to understand interplanetary souls, help interplanetary souls to understand themselves because, and we can talk about this in a moment, they have unique gifts and unique challenges. But the other reason that for years I've been working with a lot of IPS, which is the term in my new book, is that clients who seek soul level regression, again, what I call between life soul regression, clients that seek that type of regression are always more evolved versus less evolved. I would say almost every single client I work with is beyond a 5 on a 10-point scale of evolution because that soul and that human person has reached the level of evolution that a spiritual perspective of life is of interest to them. When we're younger souls, we're just living day to day and managing our typical essential responsibilities in our human life. So the population of people that I work with are almost all, you might say, 6s or 7s and above. And that's why I end up working with so many IPS.
And you said that IPS have problems. Is it that they're not built to interact with a human body? And so it brings on physical problems or emotional problems?
Yeah, I mean that's a great question, and you're right. So, and interplanetary souls vary. So I don't want to scare people and make them think that it is just horribly difficult to incarnate if you're an IPS. But so the picture of an IPS is that interplanetary souls are almost always highly skilled or advanced in one or more ways. They might be highly skilled in music. They might be highly advanced in technology, or they're very articulate in presentation, or you know, the entertainment industry, or something creative. So they have advanced skills in various ways. But yes, it's what you're saying. IP souls, and especially IP souls that haven't been on Earth more than, say, 25 or 30 times, they're struggling with the way humans function, just the way humans interact. They're struggling with the diet of humans, the air that we breathe, the pollution, the chemicals in our air, or the chemicals in our food. And so a lot of IP souls have very narrow diets, or they're very sensitive to highly energetic situations and that sort of thing. So they have to learn, which is part of the reason I do so much regression with them, is to help them understand themselves and then help them embrace themselves and create ways of life that work more effectively for them.
So is it that autism or ADHD might be an indication of this?
Absolutely, for sure. That is very common among IP souls. Is, you know, obviously the autistic spectrum is in fact a spectrum, but yes, and some of these people, often children, who don't they don't easily socialize or they don't easily communicate, it's simply because they don't have a lot of experience in the way humans operate and the way we communicate and socialize.
And so finally, before we move on to another subject, do you ever regress IP souls or any others that spontaneously go to an ET encounter in this life?
So are you, let me be sure I know what you're asking. Are you saying, do I ever regress an IP soul that goes to, so they're in their current body, but they're interacting with an IP soul somewhere outside of Earth? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I talked to somebody the other day on the podcast, Mike Cleland, and he says he was camping out one night and he saw something that looked like a UFO up on a hill. And he was transported to that UFO, and he said it was kind of like he was dropped into it. And when he found himself inside the UFO, he was one of the ETs.
Yes. So, yes, I do work with clients exactly like that. And probably what Mike is describing is that more, this would be a hunch, and I don't know this for sure, but my hunch would be Mike is an IPS and he's connecting with his own soul level. And at the soul level, he either has a past life on a spacecraft or his higher self actually resides currently on a spacecraft. But yes, I've worked with people with those kinds of experiences.
You also talk about angelic realm souls. Is that a larger percentage than IPS?
Actually not. And angelic realm souls are important to talk about simply because there's even less written about angelic souls. So again, I've learned about what I call angelic realm souls, or ARS, through my clients. And currently I would say, I mean, I don't keep track of this specifically, but I would say at least 30 to 40% of the clients I'm working with of late are angelic realm souls. So just so it's clear for the listeners, what I've discovered in my regression practice is that there are three types of souls that may choose to come to Earth. One is an Earth-based soul, like we've talked about, and Earth-based souls almost exclusively incarnate on Earth over and over and over. Then we've talked about IPS. The third type of soul that might choose to incarnate on Earth is a soul that comes from the angelic realm. So different type of soul with different qualities. So to explain, you know, what is an ARS? So the angelic realm is a group of souls, I like to call it a cadre of souls, that serve Source. The role of angelic souls is to serve Source and be emissaries or ambassadors of Source energy. I always, you know, the words are sort of insufficient to explain, but Source energy would be love, non-judgment, compassion, equality, equal opportunity, blah, 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 that sort of thing. The angelic realm directly serves, you could even say at the behest of Source, And some angelic realm souls do agree to come to Earth. Obviously, I've worked with angelic souls. And again, only about 2 to 3% of humanity are angelic realm souls. So the unique qualities of ARS are, sometimes it's fascinating, but angelic realm souls can be the most caring, kind, sensitive people you'd almost ever want to meet. I bring some to mind as I talk about them, and at times they are just beyond non-judgmental. I mean, I'm not an angelic realm soul, and so I can't say I'm, you know, never judgmental. These are people that warmth, caring, equality, support of others is almost, you know, not over the top, but beautiful. And the angelic realm is led by the archangels. Now, this has nothing to do with religion. And I'm not saying that religion, various religions aren't inaccurate, that there are archangels, but I'm not speaking per se from any religious context. I also know that some of the archangels were in body or influenced the development of the earliest civilizations on Earth, for example, the early Egyptian dynasties. But so an angelic realm soul may choose to come to Earth. And obviously they come to Earth with the purpose of carrying the energy that they carry. And they come from the focus that Source would wish that humans had a greater amount of. So yes, I've worked a lot with angelic realm souls, and the new book has a fair amount of regression content from ARS.
So how does it benefit someone to find out they're from the angelic realm?
Because then they understand why they are the way they are. They're not being naive. They understand their orientation to life. I mean, I think about one particular ARS that I've regressed more than once. And, you know, this is a woman who is very loving and caring, and every single holiday that comes along, and I'm not just talking about Christmas and Easter and that sort of thing, but, you know, and she's an American, so St. Patrick's Day, Valentine's Day, Halloween, her house is decorated from the front door and into every single room with items of, you know, creating joy, creating happiness and love, and that's just how she is. We need angelic realm souls on the planet, and I learn from my guides, who it took me years to learn to talk to my own guides, but I've figured that out to a degree. And my guides have been telling me of late that that the higher realm is focusing at this time on preparing more angelic realm souls and more IPS to come to Earth because of the needs of humanity.
And do those souls have a different type of guide to EBS souls?
Yes, that's a great question. So, and I think this is helpful for especially listeners of yours that are spiritual. So the difference among spiritual guides for EB, IP, and AR souls is this: Earth-based souls, no matter how evolved they are, Earth-based souls always have one of their guides that is not their higher self. So earth-based souls, is just the way it works, always have, they may have a team of guides, but earth-based souls always have a primary spiritual guide that is not the client's higher self. But different than that are IP and AR souls. IP and AR souls, most of the time, probably 80% of the time, are guided exclusively by their higher self, because their higher self is so highly evolved and that they can function very well and be guided. IPs and ARs are usually guided by their higher self.
You talk about the soul having a signature quality or an archetype. Is that the same as being IPS or EBS, or is it something else?
It is something else. And I decided to add that into the book because I think it's important. And yet I realize it creates more complexity. But a soul, no matter which of the three types, a soul has a signature archetypal energy. And this is related, but slightly different, but it's related to the foundation of what theosophy has taught for a long, long time, what theosophy has taught in regard to what's called the seven rays. So if I try to explain it and make it not overly complicated, there are seven archetypes that are possible archetypal energies that our soul would be. The seven archetypes essentially make up the highest frequency of energy that we could call source. And so, and there's information in this new book about this, but as a soul, each of us is only one of the seven archetypes. And the archetypes are all equally important. They're all equally healthy. It's not better to be a six versus a two or a one versus a four, but they are in fact different. So just for example, without spending too much time on it, what you might call a ray one soul, the ray one energy is the what we might call the change agent energy, or the chief or the leader energy. In other words, it's someone, and does not have to be a famous person. It could be, you know, an average, you know, Susie or Sam that has an average kind of job, but you don't have to be some out in the forefront kind of person. A Ray One soul is a change agent, meaning they want to create change in their family. They want to create change in their neighborhood. The easy example I often use is Steve Jobs and Apple computers, and the how Steve Jobs revolutionized, a long time ago, revolutionized the computer industry. It's a change agent type of person. But again, it could be a leader of a country, or a leader of a city or a county or a province or whatever. But it's always someone who's pretty strong minded. And sometimes we misunderstand Ray One souls. Sometimes we think they're too dominating. Sometimes we think they're too pushy. And that their energy is, that's the role that they, that's the archetypal energy they bring to Earth, as opposed to, just for example, Ray Two. So Ray Two is the soul energy that wants to make sure everyone gets their needs met. It's that equality, balance, caring of all unique types of people. And it follows, as you can see, one to two. We need one energy, but we need two energy. So, but those are just examples.
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book's called Soul Design, A Regressionist Guide to Past Lives, Origins and Purpose. And at what date is that published?
It's actually, I believe it's either July the 8th or July the 9th. So yeah, it's available on pre-order right now. People can go to my website or to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, and it can be ordered, but it will be, I was actually received an email just, I think it was yesterday. It will be shipped to people no later than the first week in July.
And can you again tell us about your other books?
Yes, I have. I've written three other books, and they are, you know, the first two are more broad-based and basic. And it was really before I was discovering a lot about interplanetary and angelic realm souls. So those books can be found on Amazon, or they can be found on my website. And we have copies as well, so they can be ordered through my website. And then my third book, which is the newest book, is my fourth book. My third book is called Souls on Earth. And that book came out about 7 years ago, and it is all about interplanetary souls. It's filled with interplanetary client material.
And can people book sessions with you through your website?
And they can. And I, since COVID, I do all my direct client work remotely on Zoom. So, yeah, people, no matter where they live, can go to my website and can schedule a regression.
Again, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
This week, I was talking to Dr. Linda Backman about her book, Soul Design, A Regressionist's Guide to Past Lives, Origins and Purpose. If you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. Or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And my book on verified near-death experiences is now available. You can get it on paperback, audiobook, and ebook. Just go to Amazon or your favourite bookshop. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.